record are, yeah, that the amplification always helps there, guys. Thank you. We're joined by Senators Bundy, Davis, myself, Ellis, and Senator Hoffman. Good afternoon, everyone. The order of business today is first with bills previously heard, Senate Bill 183 by Senator Kim Elton, that's the defined benefit, followed by Senate Bill 187 by Senator Wilikowski, the Alaska minimum wage. Third will be Senate Bill 230. We have a new committee substitute for the film office legislation. And fourth, we will invite our guest, Representative Mike Kelly, to join us for House Bill 233, Unclaimed Phone and Electric Co-op Distributions. So that's the game plan for today's meeting. Senate Bill 183, I see Jesse Keel here from Senator Elton's office. Is Senator Elton on the way? He is. Okay, then let's turn to, oh, he's right there? Okay. If I had a surveillance camera pointed down the hallway, I could...
4 minutes late.
Senator Elton, in the nick of time.
Thank you. I didn't know this was a mandatory appearance, and I was going to come and watch the committee do its work. How can I help you, Mr. Chair?
Either way, this, under bills previously heard, we have Senate Bill 183, and you're the prime sponsor. And you might just want to remind us of the legislation.
Absolutely.
It's been here before us and germinated a while in our minds. So today would be the time to consider action.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kim Elton. I'm the senator from District B, and we've been through the bill, and I appreciate the patience that the committee has had with me, the questions that you've asked in the past. And I'll just be very brief and make myself available for questions if committee members have any. Just a reminder that the bill hires new employees into Tier 3 PERS and Tier 2 TERS. It gives them, the new employees, a chance to earn a guaranteed benefit pension and retiree health coverage. And it does it at no cost to the system. I mean, we've talked in the past about how the defined benefit is expensive, and when you aggregate Tier 1, 2, and 3 on the PERS side, it is more expensive, but we have to remember that prior to the passage of the defined contribution, all new employees were going into Tier 3, and we now have the data from the actuaries and from the Department of Administration that shows that the Tier 3 is not that is slightly more expensive on the PERS side, I think, and slightly less expensive on the TERS side. So it's kind of a wash for the state, but it does give new employees a better benefit. I would also just kind of remind you that, as if any of you needed reminding, I feel almost awkward saying this, that our public employees, most of our public employees, don't have that safety net of Social Security that is under them, that defined benefit of Social Security. So there is no safety net there. Also note that our retiree economy in the state is almost $1.5 billion a year. And one of the reasons that it is so strong is because under the defined benefit plan, there's a cost of living adjustment that encourages people to stay here, spend their money in our drugstores, on our car lots, in our restaurants, and the defined contribution plan does not have that COLA. So I anticipate that what happens is it will encourage some of the retirees to move south, especially since one of the consequences of the defined contribution is that the health benefit component, there have been some people who have suggested that are much more expert in this arena than I, that in as little as 18 months, some families could run through their health benefit account. And that would encourage people, obviously, to perhaps relocate someplace where health costs are less. I will just end, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, by saying that there are some things this bill doesn't do. We in the review of the defined contribution plan, there were some things that we did that make absolute sense, and those things won't change. Among them is the requirement for a second actuary to check the work of the first actuary, mandatory experience studies, elected officials I think the cutoff is 24,000 are still out of the system. The ARM board will have the financial experience and disinterested members that are important. The 2010 deadline for buying back your time is still the deadline, and no employer under this bill will pay less than the normal cost rate. So with that, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, I'm open to any questions that you might have. I appreciate the consideration you've had and keeping the dialogue going on this.
Thank you for your presentation. I would note for the rest of the committee that the bill has a long way to go in this discussion. Further referrals to State Affairs, Judiciary, and Finance. I personally think the discussion's worth having about recruitment and retention of employees and teachers. I think we learn more as we go along and hear not just the anecdotal experiences, but some of the statistics as well. So I personally I hope that the conversation, even though it may not come to a final resolution, continues so that we can have that discussion together. So I'm interested in moving the bill along if the committee is willing to do so. Any further comments or questions for the presenter? If not, thank you to you and your staff, especially for answering questions and getting materials into the public record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, yeah. Members of the committee.
Is there any discussion of the legislation? There is no committee substitute. It is straightforward. It is here before us, has been in this form. If there's no discussion, the chair will entertain a motion to move the bill on to the next committee of referral.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Davis.
Motion that we move Senate Bill 183/M. With the accompanying fiscal notes and an individual recommendation from us on this.
Okay.
On the next committee.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Bundy, is speaking to your objection?
Yes. I understand both sides of the issue, and I've been in Alaska long enough to remember that back way in the pipeline era, state couldn't match salaries, so they provided pretty lucrative benefits, and of course we're having to pay for some of those benefits now that we were giving in lieu of salaries. And we went from tier one to tier two and three because we couldn't afford tier one, and I think we went to defined contribution because we couldn't afford tier two and three. The notion that we're going to force people to stay here because their retirement benefits just goes against my grain. Alaskans are mobile people. We shouldn't be making them stay in Alaska and make them sour on Alaska, not enough dough to leave through our retirement system. So I'm of course, I was a proponent of the change, so I'm not a proponent of this repeal of the change. And I do note that the number of committees of referral will probably make this bill less likely to succeed than more likely, but still have want to express my disagreement at this point.
Okay, duly noted. Is there further discussion of the motion to move the bill? There is. Senator Bundy maintains his objection, so we'll call for a roll call vote, please.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Stevens? Senator
Ellis? Yes. Okay. Thank you all very much. The bill has the requisite number of votes to move forward, and so the bill is moved on to the next committee of referral. Thank you, Senator Elton. No, take it all away. Okay, let's move on quickly to Senate Bill 187. Senator Wilkowski, if you'd join us, please. This is the Alaska minimum wage. The bill has a further referral to the Senate Finance Committee. Senator Wilkowski, if you'd just remind us briefly of the issues and we'll see what the committee wants to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm State Senator for Northeast Anchorage. This bill would raise the Alaska's minimum wage from $7.15, $8 per hour in 2009 and adjust it annually for inflation. It would also link it to any increases in the federal minimum wage by requiring that Alaska be $1 more than the federal minimum wage. That's what the bill does. There were a couple questions asked, Mr. Chair, at the last hearing. I'll address those very briefly. One question was regarding one of the statements that we made in support of this bill was Alaska's high cost of living. and there was a question asked, how does Alaska rank in terms of the 50 states? Overall, we rank 47th among 50 states in terms of our cost of living, meaning that we are the fourth highest, most expensive state in the United States. Another question that was asked was, how many Alaskans will this impact? And there are currently about 14,000 Alaskans that are in the minimum wage. Most are in accommodations and food service, retail, trade, educational services, manufacturing. A full-time worker that earns minimum wage earns about $14,000 per year, which is barely above poverty level for a single person, and is $3,000 less for a family of two. And roughly 58% of minimum wage earners are adults, and the average age of those adults is 38 years old. The other question was asked was the impact of minimum wage on Alaskan jobs, whether it would be negative or positive. And we did have testimony from Dr. Wolfson last time about that. And the current body of economic science in this field shows that there typically is no relationship between negative impacts on jobs or the economy and increases in minimum wage. In particular, in Alaska, when we increased our minimum wage in 2002, there was no impact in the state's economy or jobs that anyone has ever been able to identify. I think those were the main questions that were asked. I'm happy to entertain any more, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wilikowski, thanks for bringing the bill before us. Questions or comments? I would note that Mr. Gray Mitchell from Department of Labor and Workforce Development is available to answer questions, if there are any, regarding this legislation. Should note for the record that Senator Stevens has joined us. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does any other state have provisions of a dollar higher than the minimum wage?
No. I don't believe that. I don't believe so. No, I know there are other states that do have higher minimum wage than Alaska. In fact, Alaska's minimum wage is lower than any other state on the West Coast. And there are also several other states that currently tie theirs to an inflation rate. So Alaska, we wouldn't be unique in that regard. But I don't believe off the top of my head that there are other states that tie it to a dollar above. And in fact, I just found the number here. There are 10 states that adjust their minimum wage annually for inflation.
And Senator Wilikowski, are you prepared to remind us of the history with there was the initiative process after the state not adjusting the minimum wage for many years? We don't have an automatic adjustment. So there was a lot of pent-up frustration with that. There was a citizens initiative, and then the legislature came in and got the initiative off the ballot and then came back the next year. Can you just talk us through that so we have a little bit of history?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Because it's some of the details have faded on me.
And I think we provided you all with a list of the increases that have occurred throughout the state's history. If not, I can be happy to provide that. Essentially, in 2002, there was an initiative, and there were 47,000 signatures gathered. 47,000 Alaskans came out and said they supported increasing the minimum wage to $7.15 per hour and tying it with an annually having a cost of living adjustment tied to an inflation rate. That was certified by the Lieutenant Governor and about to appear on the ballot. The legislature then passed the law as identical to what was on the ballot initiative. I haven't been able to find the study, but I've read that there were polls taken at the time that showed that over 80% of Alaskans supported doing that. And I know from my bill, at least surveying people in my district unscientifically, I have over 80% of the people in my district support this proposal right now. And I've seen other senators with similar types of survey results. But the legislature did pass a bill identical, similar to what we're proposing right now, quite frankly, with a lower amount, $7.15, back in 2002. The following January, before the cost of living allowance would have kicked in for the next year, the legislature reopened the bill and took out the cost of living adjustment. So this is simply an effort to put that back in. And the $8 per hour, where we came up with that figure, Mr. Chair, that is actually a little bit lower than where we would be had we had that cost of living allowance since 2002. In fact, it'd be about $8.10 or $8.15, if my memory serves me right.
Okay. Thank you for the history lesson.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? This bill has been before us previously, and I guess this is the point of time for committee discussion or for committee action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
I don't know if I fully support the bill, but I do support moving it on to the next committee for consideration. That would be the Senate Finance Committee for further deliberation.
Okay. Keep the conversation going. I appreciate that. Any other comments or discussion? Senator Hoffman, would you like to turn that into a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee pass out Senate Bill 187 with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there with an objection from Senator Bundy? Is there discussion of the motion? Senator Bundy, would you like to speak to your objection?
You. Well, I've been here long enough to go around this block a time or two, and I understand the intent. I think the gains are somewhat illusionary because we all think about it seriously. The people who pay the increased cost of the minimum wage are the people who are going to be earning the minimum wage. I think there is some increased pressure on people who don't earn a minimum wage say, well, that went up, so my salary should go up, and we get an inflationary spiral started. But different points of view from different folks. I think that as most minimum wage jobs are service jobs, kind of temporary jobs, the people that are they'll get a temporary bump in one pocket and they'll lose it out of the other. And so it's illusionary. Mm-hmm. And I've seen too many bills that I thought were flawed allowed to move to the next committee because we want to increase the discussion only to find that then bad bills become bad law. So I maintain my objection.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bundy. Is there further discussion of the motion? The objection is maintained. So call for a roll call vote on the motion to move the bill.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
Yes. Okay, so the bill moves on to the next committee referral with individual recommendations. Thank you, Senator Wilikowski.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sure you'll continue to work on the legislation. Appreciate your efforts. Okay, the next is Senate Bill 230. Mr. Hensley, from my staff, if you could join us at the table. You all will remember there were some concerns about internships and a few other issues at the last meeting. Mr. Hensley, if you could, so Senate Bill 230 is the bill before us at this time. Mr. Hensley, if you could go through what, state the concern from the last meeting and then how we've proposed to address that. There is a committee substitute in each member's packets. We're going to hear the explanation before I take a motion to adopt. Mr. Hensley, take it away.
For the record, my name is Max Hensley, staff to Senator Ellis. In the last hearing on Tuesday, we had a discussion about the internship program, and in consultation with Senator Stevens, we've attempted to address that in this new CS, which is in front of you, the O version. Let's make sure there's no confusion. What this does is that it allows the film office under the duties section on page 2 to certify Alaska Film Production Internship Training Programs, which is, and to promote the employment of the program interns by eligible productions. This removes the link between the internship program and the university, and it removes the questions we'd had about private industry wishing to maintain internship programs, individual people wishing to apply to the film office. The film office has assured us that this kind of permitting or this kind of certification, it would be well within their ability to do with regulation.
Okay, can you give us the page number again and the line so we can read it and see if we're...
That is page 2, lines 15 and 16.
Okay, so this is the issue of the internships.
Yes.
And allowing public and private training programs.
Yes, and along with that, there was some material deleted from elsewhere in the bill that was that were the sections under discussion during the last hearing. So.
Okay. Okay, on that specific point, are there questions or any problems with the language that we've worked out here. If not, we'll retain, or we may come back to that issue after people think about it. But please go ahead with the next issue.
The other change that was made was on page 4, lines 13 through 16.
Which version are we on, Mr. Chairman?
Through the chair, the O version, Senator Stevens.
Okay, I'm looking at the wrong committee substitute as well.
Okay, here we are.
I have the L version, Dana. Okay, let's get rid of that one. Okay, everybody should be on the O version, committee substitute, / O. Okay, cite the page and number again.
Page 4, lines 13 through 16. A tighter definition of the duties of the independent CPA who is going to verify the spending done in the state. So this is in response to Senator Bundy's concerns about fraud. This language was suggested to us by the drafters as the most precise way to allow them to do that, while also allowing them to address other potential issues.
Senator Bundy on that point.
Regarding that point, and then item F hasn't changed where it says film office may not seek recourse. So you feel item D will guarantee that if there were something fraudulent, that would be caught beforehand, so then we don't have to seek recourse? Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, that's the intention.
Thank you.
Otherwise, it's too much of a danger to someone to take the project.
Yes.
If the credits can be taken back. There's always legal recourse for fraud, but you don't want to have the incentive in danger of being pulled.
Yes, and that's a concern with these type of transferable credits. The secondary market for them will be significantly weakened if there's a potential for a party who purchases the credits, not involved in the production at all, but if they could be held liable for the activity of the producers, their interest in participating would be.
Okay, so just to clarify Senator Bundy's point, the legal the language between lines 13 and 16 on page 4 is the protection for the state.
Exactly.
To avoid the problem. Okay. go ahead.
The final issue that was raised during the meeting earlier this week was in terms of at the bottom of page 4, the listing of qualified expenditures. The language on line 26 that the spending must be directly incurred within the state. In discussions with the Department of Commerce and the current film office, they feel that that language will allow them to develop regulations which will comport with the intent of the bill, that simply ordering products will not be legitimate spending.
Okay, so that was the Bundy concern as well, that you can't be in the state and order from, place the order in Alaska to Seattle. You have to be in Alaska, or you have to be placing the order to Alaska businesses.
There are going to be some legitimate spending, legitimately qualified expenditures. There are things that are not available in the state, technical lighting, things of that order, and they'll be needed to be transported here.
Right.
Alaskan businesses, transportation, shipping businesses will be involved in that, and that would be part of the qualified expenditure.
That's allowable. Okay.
Chairman.
Senator Bundy Senator Stevens first.
I'm not sure this says exactly what you are saying, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, but anyway, if you just look at and, post-production expenditures directly incurred in the state. So you're only talking about post-production expenditures directly incurred in the state. Or are you talking about everything above that directly incurred in this state? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I hear you. Senator, Mr. Hensley?
Yes, I believe that this reads the pre-production, production, and post-production expenditures, any of those three which are directly incurred within the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand your intention. I'm wondering if this says what, does everyone understand it except me? You list 1, 2, 3 things. The third thing has a addition to it that says directly incurred in the state. The other two
Does the directly incurred apply to all three?
It includes.
I think that is the normal
That would be my reading.
Construction.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
For the record, I think we could state that it includes all three, pre-production, production, and post-production.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's the way the drafters do those things, but we're stating here on the record that that is the intent of this committee in the legislation, that all three of those types of costs be incurred in the state. Were there other issues, Mr. Hensley? I think that was it, isn't it?
That covers what I was intending to speak to.
Okay. Did we get it right on the internship? Do you guys feel that that addresses? I think they did a pretty good job pinning that down. But okay, Mr. Hensley, thank you very much. If you could just stay with us. I hope to move this bill. You know, we wanted to do all the work in the committee except for the financial or fiscal aspect of things, and move this bill. I hope to move it along here soon so we can get up to the Finance Committee and make our case there at some point. So I don't want to talk the bill to death, but some folks have asked to speak. Carolyn Vaughn is available for questions. Dama Chazel has spoken before. Dama, do you have something to add?
Yes, I just wanted to address a couple of points from last Tuesday's meeting to urge everyone to consider the increased rates. If you have time for me to add that now, I will.
Briefly, sure.
And that is just the cost of currently getting much of the equipment and transportation to Alaska is very expensive. And currently, there aren't enough crew or trained crew available, nor is there adequate infrastructure. And so I wanted to make a very strong case for supporting the 30% base tax credit to offset these costs, and again, underscoring the jobs that will come as a result of having this industry there. Typically, a studio film employs several hundred people. These are high-paying, high-tech jobs that last for months, and they plow considerable monies and revenues into local economies from the obvious hotels and restaurants, car rentals, airfare, to the less obvious, the lumber yard, the dry cleaners, the teachers, because every movie set that has a minor on it must have a teacher, seamstresses, caterers, extras, animal wranglers, film, digital lab processing. All of that follows if we have a successful film program. And it's always preferable to hire trained local crew because of the savings in travel and living and the locals' knowledge of the customs and procedures. So I just want to really encourage everyone to support the increased rates. Thank you so much.
Okay, Ms. Chazel, thank you very much. Next is William Cavan. Mr. Cavan?
Oh, that's Cavan, yes.
Cavan, please please state your affiliation for the record, if any, and go ahead.
Oh, actually, I'm an independent video and film producer from Orlando, Florida, and I actually heard a little bit about this. I'm presently producing a low-budget film that'll be taking place in Florida, and I wanted to commend everyone on the absolutely wonderful job you guys are doing on this incentive program. It actually is getting a few of the people that I've been talking to go, Alaska is the place to film this, and to hire locals. So I just want, like I said, I just wanted to call in and commend you guys on that.
Well, that's encouraging.
Job well done. Keep up the good work.
Okay, we appreciate that. We have a ways to go on this bill, so we're going to try and move it along, and we appreciate your encouragement. Michael Collier?
Yeah, that would be me.
Yes, please go ahead.
I'm a local director of photography up in Anchorage, and I shoot a bunch of, right now, just shorts and a few features. But the one thing I've noticed when I go to do my projects is that the crew base is dwindling. I mean, I've had so many friends that go from college and they want to get into film, and they just decide, I can't do it here. I got to go to California. I got to go to Austin, New York, and they all leave. And so when I'm making my small projects, it becomes hard for even me to find crew. And so I imagine when a larger crew or a larger film comes up, it becomes even more difficult for them to find locals. And so they hire out from other places bring them up, and or it prevents them from shooting at all. And so an incentive would start to build more of a crew base up here, more talent, more people, and also bring up more projects, which in turn would start a range of films. You'd have your big films, but you'd also have your indies, which would allow, you know, the up-and-comers to have a chance to get onto crews, to see what filmmaking's about, see if they like it. And so I just want to thank you guys for considering this, and I want to throw my full support to it. You know, I think a filmmaking community in Alaska can grow, and I think it can be a big boon to the economy. And so that's all I'd like to say.
Mr. Collier, thank you very much for your testimony today. I noted at the last meeting just the avalanche of support from the strangest corners of Alaska, and all kinds of folks, and from large to small concerns. It's been an overwhelming experience. So thank you for being part of that.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I would note that Carolyn McConkey, Dan Stickle from Commerce and Revenue, respectively, are available to answer any questions. I know they'll be, when we get a hearing before the Finance Committee, we'll want you guys there to provide your expertise. And for a quick wrap-up, Kate Tessar, you're the last person signed up to testify, and then we want to consider action on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kate Tessar with the Alaska Film Group. I'd like to thank the chairman and the committee members. I think issues came forward that I hope we address that make this an even better piece of legislation. I think, as Senator Ellis said, there's support coming from all corners, known and unknown. And as you probably saw yesterday, it just became known that the Coen brothers, who are Academy Award-winning film directors, have purchased the rights to a recent bestseller that is set here in Alaska. So that has already set the wheels of motion going. We've got people in the Alaska Film Group contacting them, and so the timing could not be better on this bill. So I just want to thank the committee for their hard work. I think the bill has been tightened up and come better with your help.
We understand that the Coen brothers movie may involve a riot in Sitka that Senator Stedman could participate in if he so chose.
I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman. I haven't seen the screenplay yet.
Yeah.
The book is fabulous.
Yeah. Senator Stevens.
In the timeline of things, could this, if this bill were to pass, would it actually have an impact on that film, you think?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that is a question that we're all asking. I think some of us have been around a long time and understand that the regulatory process itself can be quite time-consuming, but it is our hope that with the support of the legislature, timely passage, and the support of the administration, that we can get regulations written, and so that actual people interested in film productions in this fiscal year would be able to partake of the incentives. So that is indeed our deepest hope.
Okay. Ms. Tessar, any further questions or comments for Ms. Tessar? If not, Ms. Tessar, I like your button. I'm considering changing the button, though, to Shoot Alaska, which we might get more of the gun enthusiasts to help support the bill.
Yes,
so.
Senator. We appreciate your enthusiasm in getting the buttons.
Well, that was all Max Hensley's doing, so we love the buttons. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to entertain a motion at this time to adopt the committee substitute that Mr. Hensley walked us through. It's the /O Bullard version that we just considered. Senator Davis has moved the adoption of the committee substitute. Is there any objection, any discussion, any objection to adoption? If not, the Bullard /O version is the item before us. Discussion on the bill. I think we've gone through the technical aspects of this, the logistical aspects of this, but some of the, you know, the financial impact to the state remains an issue, a topic of discussion by our friends in finance. But I think we've gone through every line of the bill to make sure that it fits our expectations. Senator Bundy.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I won't object to the passage of the bill, but I would like to make a comment that it still boggles my mind that we're giving transferable tax credits to an entity that doesn't pay any taxes. I think the Truth in Labeling should have the title the Film Subsidy Bill. Now, that would probably be a bit more accurate. And I have high hopes that while I understand that there will be employment and local purchases, that this will not end up being a unsustainable drain on the state treasury, and we have to cancel it like we did the previous one. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bundy. I would just note that the state of Alaska, we choose to operate in a certain way here with our corporate taxation and our personal taxation, whether that be income tax or sales tax, and we choose to operate our state on oil resources to the or oil revenues to a tremendous extent. Whether that's wise or not in the long term, we shall see. But this is an opportunity for us to take advantage of and to have a lot of economic development and employment. But it remains on our shoulders if we were to try and change the tax structure of the state of Alaska so that we didn't have the Alaska disconnect, that economic development and new jobs in the state were actually could be considered a drain on the state treasury, though a benefit to local treasuries. So we make our choices at the state level of how to run our state, and that may change in the future. Who knows? I'm not an advocate for those kinds of taxes, but we'll see how things develop. Senator Bundy?
Well, you mentioned the oil industry, and it just popped into my mind. I can't help but think it's somewhat ironic that we're about to move a bill forward that provides tax incentives because it will increase development when a few short months ago we raised huge taxes on an industry and said, well, it won't affect their ability to invest at all. So I guess consistency isn't always our long suit.
The proof's in the pudding. We'll see how it all turns out, and I think we'll be here to take note. Any further discussion of the bill? If the committee's ready, I will entertain a motion to move the bill on to the next committee of referral. Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chair, I move that we move CS sponsor for Senate Bill number 240, old version, out of committee with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay, is there objection to the motion? Any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, the bill moves on to the next committee of referral. Thank you to all the folks who helped us get to this point. Okay, let's move quickly now to House Bill 233, Unclaimed Phone and Electric Co-op Distributions. Representative Kelly was around, but it looks like he has a staffer here. Is he headed back to the committee, or will you be presenting?
I'll be presenting, Mr.
Chairman. Okay. Is that because he's tied up with another important meeting?
Representative Kelly's in House Finance, right?
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that.
Be in his stead.
If you could state your name for the record, and please go ahead with your presentation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Derek Miller, and I'm staff to Representative Kelly. And I'm here to present to you HB 233, which, as I've explained to folks, isn't the most glamorous of bills, but it's an important one, nevertheless, especially for some of our rural telephone and electric cooperatives in the state. The bill addresses the sometimes burdensome and ineffective noticing requirements of unclaimed property law regarding capital credits of electric and telephone cooperatives. From time to time, these co-ops receive excess revenues from its members that exceed the expenses of operations, and they hold these revenues in member-owned capital accounts called capital credits on behalf of the member, or sometimes called net margins, but capital credits for the purposes of this bill. These co-ops may refund a portion of these accumulated credits, but in some cases, the cooperative seeking to refund the capital credits can no longer find the member through their last known address. As a result, many go unclaimed. In current statute, unclaimed property law allows the credits to be reverted back to the cooperative as long as the cooperative, at least 6 months prior to the reversion, has mailed a notice to the last known address, published a notice as required by law or court rule, and published a notice in a newspaper of general circulation. So while mailing to the last known address of a member sometimes results in finding members, a newspaper publication does not result in a significant increase in the number of members who cash their capital credits. And as a result, the cost of compliance of that part of the law is significant, and the effectiveness is questionable at best. So HB 233 allows cooperatives the option of using the internet instead of newspaper publication to notify its members of these unclaimed capital credits. We're one of the most wired states in the union, and this allows us to utilize that. And as an example that I can give you that I believe some folks online can give you, but AVEC, Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, serves about 52 disparate villages, and they end up spending many thousands of dollars to publish in several different newspapers. But they also have a website, and the names of unlocated members are continuously published there. So they're folks like that are asking to be able to utilize that resource that will hopefully, in effect, allow them to locate more members than they are currently. This legislation is supported by the Alaska Powers Association, which I don't believe I included in your impacts in your packets, but they do have a resolution of support that I can hand out if you'd like to see that, as well as several other rural co-ops. And I think there's a bunch of folks online that are available to testify to this bill, and I can make myself available to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, sir. We if you do have written material for the public record, just get those to our committee staffer who will put those in the packets. Any questions or comments for Mr. Miller?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman?
How many newspapers does AVEC have to advertise in?
I'm not quite sure, but Senator Hoffman,
probably.
I believe we have Mira Kohler available online that can actually tell you that.
All right.
Other comments or questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stevens.
Just to clarify this for me. We're talking about primarily people who have moved. I mean, if they're available and still a customer, that's easy enough to get the credits to them. But somebody who's moved out of the community and you can't locate them.
Correct, Senator.
Can you give me a number, an idea of how many we're talking about?
Again, I'm not quite sure, but again, we do have some folks that can tell you exactly, actually, what we're talking about. And I think the problem is that the cost of complying with this law is more than the actual amounts that are in these accounts.
Right.
So,
anything else for Mr. Miller? If not, Mr. Miller, thank you very much. Let's go out of consideration for the vice chair of this committee, Senator Stevens. We're going to go directly to Kodiak. To Darren Scott.
Could we always do that?
No. Hey, no, just this one special time.
My name is Darren Scott. I'm the CEO of Kodiak Electric Association, the local electric cooperative in Kodiak. And again, reflecting what's already been said, I speak in support of this bill. We have to go through a process that costs us about $4,000 a year in notifications of the paper that's very ineffective. This bill before you. This does a much better job notifying our past members. The internet is just much more the day and time we live in. As Senator Stevens reflected on, most of these folks have moved on. We've got a fairly transient community in Kodiak. So it's difficult to notify them using the local paper, but the internet would be a much more reasonable resource and hopefully a much more productive resource to track these folks down. So, we have hundreds of folks that we have to try to track down on a yearly basis, and we are very much in support of this bill, and hopefully it moves forward.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. Just for folks, it's not our intention to move the bill today. That's just the common practice of the committee to hear a bill and then to think it over and have it back before us in the near future. So that would be my intention as chair. Anything for Mr. Scott? If not, thank you very much for being with us. Let's move to off-net. Ron Vacera or Vacera?
Hello, my name is Ron Vacera. I am the Director of Member Services at Chugach Electric, Anchorage, Alaska. We're an electric cooperative that serve about 65,000 retail members at about 80,000 metered locations. And we are also in support of House Bill 233. Capital Credits Administration is very time-consuming and expensive, and it's due to the high rate of turnover of the membership. And even in Anchorage, we have very, very high turnover as people move in and out of the city and also within the Anchorage area, as there are three utilities between Anchorage and Eagle River. We pay capital credits on a regular basis, and we run a list of names of people with unclaimed capital credits nearly every year. And each of the years we publish a list of names in the paper, we spend about $55,000 for that advertising, as our listing of names typically requires about 60 to 20 pages in the paper. It ends up being a complete section within the newspaper. We end up reissuing about 2,500 to 3,000 checks, which is about 15 to 20% of the names listed. So we do have some success with it, but yet there's a very, very large number that we do not end up connecting with. People do contact us based on the listing of names in the paper, and they contact us on their own behalf as well as on behalf of people they know, friends or relatives. However, this is a very expensive way of making these contacts as opposed to using an internet-type system, because if we're able to limit our newspaper advertising to just directing people to our website where they can view an online list that can they can look for their own name or others that they know, we would save about $50,000 per year. And furthermore, the online list can remain in place for an extended period of time. It doesn't just get published on four discrete occasions and then it's gone. We can leave it there. And this allows people additional time to discover that they or someone they know are on this list. So in closing, I'd just like to reiterate that Capital Credits Administration is time-consuming and expensive, and this is a good opportunity to help the electric and telephone cooperatives save some money and still do an effective job. Chugach Electric supports House Bill 233. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vassar. We appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you.
Let's go to Glenn Allen for Robert Wilkinson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much to you and the members of the committee. Happy Valentine's Day today.
Oh, to you as well.
My name is Robert Wilkinson. I'm the CEO of Copper Valley Electric, and I just wanted to add a few remarks to my support for House Bill 233. I did provide written testimony to the committee, hopefully is in your packet. In the interest of moving on, I agree wholeheartedly with all the other folks that have testified in support of this bill. CVA is very interested in this, and we have in fact been advertising for invalid addresses on our website for a number of years, and believe we actually, although I don't have any empirical data to support this, in talking with the folks that work with this on a daily basis, they've told me that they think it's more successful than newspaper advertising that we've done in the past. I might add that the majority of Alaska co-ops use these escheated capital credits to support education programs, specifically scholarships for youth of our member owners. And in CVA's case, over the past 15 years, we've put over $100,000 into scholarships for kids of Copper Valley Electric members from unclaimed margins. We think, in summary, we think this is a good piece of legislation that will help cooperative telephone and electric utilities from the North Slope all the way to Southeast. And we appreciate your support. Thank you for allowing the hearing today and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkinson. We appreciate you being with us. Let's go to the Anchorage site. We have Marilyn Leland and Ray Craig. Ms. Leland, if you go ahead, please.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Leland, and I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Power Association, which I think probably all of you know is the statewide trade association for the electric utilities that supply power to roughly a half a million Alaskans in communities from Barrow to Onalaska and down the Inside Passage. I'm testifying today in support of the bill. Our membership has been watching this last year and this year, and they believe that the language proposed in this bill would give them a process that is more effective for locating former customers of their utilities who are owed capital credits. In addition, they believe that the new process would save them and their member customers many thousands of dollars in advertising expense. The current method of publishing a lengthy list of names four times in local newspapers is cumbersome, expensive, and not even terribly effective in most of the smaller communities in Alaska. If you think about it, if someone is no longer a customer of a utility, that probably means that they don't even live there anymore, so that if it was published in the local newspaper, they're not likely to see it. I also want to note, too, that using the Internet for notice already has some precedent in Alaska's unclaimed property statutes. The Alaska Department of Revenue already gives notice to owners of unclaimed property using an Internet website. So in conclusion, I'll say that allowing the utilities to advertise the address of their website where customers can find the list makes a lot of sense in this age of the Internet, and we strongly encourage you to move this bill forward. I also just wanted to add, too, that Mira Kohler had planned to be here today, but she is tied up with the Alaska Forum on the Environment and was unable to get away from there, so she is not going to be testifying orally today. However, I believe that you were given her written testimony yesterday.
We were. Thank you, Ms. Leland.
Thank you.
We have a comment or question from Senator Bundy.
Thank you. More of a rhetorical question. The expense of this publishing, of course, is not borne by the electrical utility, but is passed on as an operating expense to the consumer, I assume.
Yes, that's my understanding as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Ray Craig, Mr. Craig?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hang on, Mr. Craig, just a second. Senator Stevens?
I just wondered if Marilyn would help us understand a little bit about. Now, I understand. I've left the community, and you can't find me. My physical address no longer exists, so you're going to try and contact me on the Internet. I just need to know how that happens. How do you try to do that? And I'm thinking, you know, I've never had anybody give me money back on the Internet, except that guy in Nigeria who keeps trying to give me money. But, so how do you actually try to contact me on the Internet?
Well, we wouldn't. I don't think they would be trying to contact you on the Internet. What they would do instead would, rather than advertising a long list of names four times, there would be a smaller advertisement in the paper that would direct people to the Internet where they could look at the names. And I think, you know, you would also, I live in Anchorage now, but I used to live in Cordova, and I was a member of a co-op there. And so, you know, I'm familiar with this, and so I know that at some point I'm going to have some unclaimed capital credits there. So, you know, knowing that, I could go to look at their website and get the link on there and see the list that they have. So I think that would be more effective, though, because as far as trying to find something in the newspaper, it would just be hit or miss if you happen to look at the right day of the newspaper, where if it's on the Internet at the co-op's website, it would be there all of the time.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Mr. Craig, I'm sorry to have interrupted you. Please go ahead.
Okay, no problem. Good afternoon. My name is Ray Craig. I'm testifying here as chairman of Chugach Consumers and Advocacy Group for Electric Utility Customers. I've also served for 6.5 years on the Chugach Electric Board and was board president for 2 years in the mid-90s. Chugach Consumers was formed in 96 to advocate for the general public interest of Chugach Electric ratepayers to educate consumers and to diversify our economy. It's a group of fiscally concerned ratepayers and others that support safe, reliable power at the lowest possible cost for all electric utility customers in South Central Alaska. Chugach Consumers supports HB 233 with what we think is a pretty minor modification. This is a good step into the modern era, and the utility managers that have testified before me have already laid out all of the reasons for it. But we have a concern that it's going actually too far. And what it's doing by not putting any minimum requirements on what kind of an advertisement the utilities would do really basically makes it possible for a utility to put a fine print ad buried in the back of the legal notices of the paper, which essentially is disappearing from the view and the attention of the public. So the fact that the utilities can keep unclaimed capital credits, and even if they do use them in many cases for charitable purposes in their communities, we feel that this is, as I say, going too far and setting up a conflict of interest that really can encourage a lack of notice and increase reversions to the co-op. And the fix that we think can be made to the bill is to require a minimum size display ad, and it could be something like 6 inches by 3 inches, 4 times a year. And an attention-getting headline like, "Do we owe you money? Abandon Chugach Electric capital credits" as the grabber, and then the Internet website address should be enough to do it. And, you know, in the case of Chugach Electric, Mr. Vissera has said, this advertising does allow thousands and thousands of people to recover their their capital credits. It's a very expensive thing to do, $50,000 a year for Chugach, but if 15% of those people are recovering their capital credits, it does gather attention. That said, we don't think that expenditure of money is cost effective, but we think that a little tweak to this bill is a reasonable accommodation to making sure that there is some attempt to put an ad in that is big enough to be noticed. And I would also say that this kind of a display ad should probably be required in the internet versions of papers, because as people leave the community, they will tend to look back at their local newspaper, many of them, to keep up with what's going on, and that they're a notice by an internet advertising in the web editions of the paper is going to scoop in some more attention to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Craig, for your testimony and your suggestion. Mr. Miller, could you come back to the table? Is this a suggestion that's new to you, or have you heard this before? And what's your response on behalf of your boss to this suggestion?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is a new suggestion for me, and I'd be happy to sit down with the committee and folks that have probably just testified to work out an arrangement where some of these suggestions might be incorporated into the bill.
Okay. I think I personally would be interested in the committee having a committee substitute before us that would incorporate something along those lines, a minimum size of ad. And do you happen to know, I guess in this day and age, all of these entities collect email addresses so that they could notify people by email the availability of unclaimed capital credits? That's probably not, or I don't know if that's a requirement in the law now, or if that's just a matter of how they do business.
I, Mr. Chairman, I think it might be a matter of how they do business, but I can make sure and get back to the committee on that.
Okay. So you would think any of these entities would email everyone for whom they have email addresses and then have some sort of minimal size ad in local publications to get the word out. So I would ask you to take Mr. Craig's well, I see you're writing them down. You're taking them seriously. Talk to your boss about some changes that could be proposed to the committee. We're having this bill back before us at our meeting on Saturday, and hopefully we'd have something for the committee to consider at this time, or at that time. Any other concerns or questions to follow up on that? Because I do want to make Saturday a productive meeting. And Mr. Miller, if you could work with committee staff, we'll order a committee substitute once we have some suggestions to put in writing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on the bill before us at this time? This is the public hearing on House Bill 233. Hearing none, I would like to announce that we will be meeting Saturday at 1:30 here in the Belt Room. There has been a suggestion that we consider having, if we have to have more Saturday meetings, and we're not sure if we will, that we consider having them earlier in the day so as not to break up the day, and we'll take that under advisement as a good suggestion. But this Saturday, the calendar will consist of Senate Bill 153, Peace Officers, Firefighters, Retirement, that's a bill previously heard, and this one, House Bill 233, and we'd hope to have a committee substitute for you on this unclaimed distribution issue. Possibly other bills that we've already heard, but we would let you know in advance if there are other bills that are ready to go. We're working with various sponsors on whether there's adequate support and whether any changes in the bills are necessary. But we'll give you advance warning. Is there any further business to come before the committee today? If not, thank you all for sticking with us. And at 2:30 in the afternoon, we are adjourned.